RadioInfluence.com.
He got him in the white trunks. He heard it.
Beautiful.
Oh, God.
That's beautiful. He's got it.
And he forced the top. Wow.
Hey, here's Lucas Amici. And it's all over. It's all over. First round knockout.
Big is how Rich Franklin retains his belt.
The one thing that I never thought in a million years would happen, happened.
The champion. The challenger. Here we go.
This is the MMA Report with Jason Floyd on Radio Influence.
Welcome to the October 17th edition of the MMA Report podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. Come here on this week's edition of the podcast. We're going to talk about the pay-per-view price point for Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz 3, Eddie Alvarez leaving the UFC and signing with ONE Championship. We'll take a look back at what happened last weekend at Bellator 207 and 208. Going to have fighter interviews with Bubba Jenkins, Abdiel Velasquez, and Chris Montino. We'll take a look back at what happened at last weekend's PFL event and preview Saturday's PFL 10. Plus, we're going to talk about Ronda Rousey's comments about UFC Star Tribune. We'll have our buy sell. We'll talk about some various news and notes going on in the world of MMA. Of course, if you're not subscribing to this podcast, you can do that on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. While you're there, leave a rating and review. We're actually doing a late night podcast here on Wednesday night, October 17th. It's been a busy day here in the Radio Influence offices. But Daniel, man, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Jason. Yeah, we're here recording. We'll unveil the curtain. It's like 10:45 your time, which, keep in mind, Jason usually goes to sleep at 6:30 p.m. I mean, this guy is an 80-year-old man in a 30-some-year-old body with a 20-year-old work ethic. I don't know how you are, but that's
I'll
you.
Tell you. Yeah, I mean, usually I'm usually in bed by 9:30. If I'm staying up past 10 o'clock, it's kind of a late night. Even though last night I did stay up and watch the NBA, I'll tell you, last Friday when we talk about Bellator, we can talk about this a little bit more. Man, I was struggling getting through that broadcast just because, God, I just hate the flow of cable cards on in MMA and what we're at with all the Thor content, whatnot. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But I want to start off this week's podcast by talking about the pay-per-view price point for Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz 3. Of course, this is going to take place on Thanksgiving weekend. And, Daniel, I was just kind of browsing around various, sites, and I was like, I wonder if the Liddell Ortiz fight is going to be on Fight. And so I go over to Fight, and I see price point. They listed as $49.99, and so I just go on my Twitter account, put a tweet out there. Of course, got a ton of reaction. I would probably say about 95% of the responses were, hell no, I'm not going to pay $50 for that. And then the undercard comes out for this fight card, and man, I don't know how. I mean, look, it's, I'm sure people will pay for this because of, there may be Chuck fans or maybe Tito fans, but I don't know how you can justify paying $50 for this pay-per-view when you look at what the undercard is.
Look, unless Elon Musk is listening to this podcast, there is no one listening to this podcast, yourself, myself included, none of us make enough money to justify throwing down $50 on Liddell Ortiz and Gleison Tibau versus Efrain Escudero. It's just financially irresponsible, Jason, all right? That's $50. That's like 100 buffalo wings on a 50-cent Thursday, like 4 different types of sushi rolls. $50 for this fight is just – it's a crime. It really is. And I don't know who's going to buy this fight. Well, I do know. I think I might. I think the vast majority is just MMA media that feel obligated to watch this fight and a few hardcore MMA fans. But I just don't know how you can go to Fight TV, which is a great website, and look at that $49.99 price tag and put in your credit card or debit card information, Jason, and purchase this fight. I mean, there is no way with the main card announced and Liddell and Ortiz that you are going to get your money's worth.
I mean, here's the one thing. I am more interested in watching the Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, which I think is going to be like $25 on the Bleacher Report pay-per-view thing, than I am interested in paying $50 to watch Chuck Liddell versus Tito Ortiz. I mean, it's a fight that doesn't interest me. I mean, I look at this and you start to look at this undercard, you know, and you look at right now, they have six fights listed for the pay-per-view, which, by the way, will start at 9 p.m. Eastern time, 6 p.m. on the West Coast. Based on what MMA Junkie has here, your co-main event is Kenneth Berg versus, I'm not sure if it's Jorge or George, but Gonzalez. We've got Gleison Tibau versus Efren Escudero. Wael Watson versus Ricardo. I'm not going to try to butcher Ricardo's last name. I probably would. Then we got Deron Wynn against Tom Lawler. And Jay Silva versus Oscar Cotto. Like, I look at that and I just say, as a fight fan, how can you justify spending $50 on this card?
Look, I mean, those are fine fights. Those are fights that we would consume for free on or not for free, but on TV, on a PFL card, on a Bellator card. But none of those fights announced on the main card draw any eyeballs or my own interest into purchasing this card. I mean, the game plan in order to get people to watch this show was to spend some money on some top flight free agents, some interesting names in order to make this card deep, because with a main event like Liddell and Ortiz, that is sad when you just say it. It needed something else. You know, Eddie Alvarez just signed with 1FC. It needed someone like Eddie Alvarez. And you look at it, Kenneth Berg and Jorge Gonzalez or George Gonzalez and T-Bow and Escudero, and I'm not even sure if Tom Lawler will for sure be on this card. I don't know if that's official or not. I know the Wrestling Observer, where he works, like that was kind of up in the air at this point in time and had not been signed. But as interesting as Tom is, and we've advocated that Bellator sign him, he just doesn't move the needle, unfortunately, at a $50 price point. And that's even distracting us from the point that, like, Chuck Liddell should absolutely not be fighting.
No, he should not. I mean, it's just, you look at it, and I think people are going to find some way to or whether it's watch highlights after the fact, because it's almost kind of like it's this intrigue of how bad could this fight possibly be. I mean, when I look at this fight, to me, in terms of how they would have maximized the eyeballs, to me, it would have been going on like a DAZN, you know, or some type of streaming service where, because, you know, to me, when you put in a $50 price tag out there, to me, this seems nothing more than a money grab.
Oh, it's totally a money grab. It's totally, this was the game plan, a one-time shot for two aging veterans to get some money. And it's a point where there just was no self-awareness from Oscar De La Hoya, Liddell, or Ortiz, and the fact that people just aren't interested in this fight at this level. Put it on DAZN, put it on a streaming service or a television channel. There will be way more eyeballs for this. But for all intents and purposes, again, the viewership for this show is going to be so minimal. But me and you will still talk about it, because we do know there is potential for chaos, and Liddell is still a name that we have to talk about, even though against basically anyone's advice, he's going to fight again.
Yeah, I mean, and of course, you know, I mentioned DAZN, the big news from DAZN on Wednesday that they have signed Canelo Alvarez, which I know me and you are going back on text messages earlier today. You know, I think part of this is it's kind of twofold in this. It's like, man, wow, DAZN is really throwing a ton of money out there, which when you see, you know, I think it's $73 million a year they're paying Canelo and Golden Boy, you know, for him to fight there. Also, we will be 10 Golden Boy shows a year, which I'm like, man, how do you kind of monetize that when you're a $9.99 a month subscription model? But I think also it kind of shows that, you know, you look at the biggest draw in boxing right now, you'd have to say it's Canelo. I'm sure there's some people out there that would say it's GGG, or, maybe it could be a Deontay Wilder. But I think this is another sign of boxing kind of going away from the pay-per-view model.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, with the news of HBO dropping boxing, that was a major, major shift in the landscape. And looking at it from DAZN's standpoint, as crazy as it may seem, and you can't really figure out how they're going to make their money back, Jason. It's kind of how streaming services have gone about their business, Jason. You look at Netflix, you look at Amazon or Hulu, it's spend, or ESPN Plus, spend. Build your audience and hope to profit later. because you look at Netflix, there's like 17 new TV shows and 20 new movies every single week. Surely they are making a huge profit, and maybe they are, maybe they aren't, but they're the big dog in the landscape. And all the other little dogs are looking at what Netflix is doing, and it seems like the game plan is spend now, worry about the profit later, because the most important thing is to get those subscribers, and hopefully in the long run it works out. But we're looking at DAZN, we're looking at ESPN Plus, which I think has probably the best likelihood of being successful among all the sports properties because of the branding with ESPN. And in the long term, it's hard to see how these things work out. But I do tell you this much, Jason, as a combat sports consumer, DAZN is just looking great now. When Bellator was first announced on the streaming service, I was a little skeptical. I really was. But now that I know I pay this monthly fee, I get the Bellator shows, and I also get so many of boxing's biggest stars, Jason, as well as other combat sports, I'm kind of buying in on DAZN. But again, that price tag is steep, especially when you get in bed with Canelo Alvarez.
Yeah, it makes you wonder, will eventually that price tag maybe start to kind of creep up to, you know, maybe even $15 or $20 a month, or maybe it's kind of the months that Canelo's fighting or something along those lines. I mean, you know, I think, you know, I sat there and I watched the Fedor and Shell fight Saturday night in my hotel room on DAZN, and man, it was a great stream. And you know, I think the best part, you know, if you're a cord cutter, it's great that you have access to Bellator, or you have access to KSW, and there's other MMA promotion. Combatives Americas is on there. But also, if you forget to set your DVR and you have that DAZN subscription, you know, you can go back and watch it. So I have been impressed. And we got this question from Steve asking what our opinion on the new DAZN streaming service and Bellator. You know, overall, I mean, look, I talked about it last week. You know, I think in terms of going back and watching a fight card on demand, I think they can maybe do a little bit better job. Maybe look at how UFC Fight Pass does it. But overall, you know, a couple events now into DAZN, I think it's a very solid product.
Absolutely, man. I mean, our brains are being rewired since we started this podcast to where we are today, Jason. We are different people with how we consume stuff. Mm-hmm. It is rare that I sit in front of a TV and watch what's on TV, like live, for like longer than a 3-hour period. I will only do it for, you know, college football, major playoff games, or the NFL. Vast majority of how I consume things is on demand, and DAZN is absolutely winning me over currently. And again, if you're Bellator, it's like the one last thing I need out of DAZN, Jason, the one last thing I need out of DAZN and Bellator, aside from the fact that you should need to be able to, there needs to be bookmarks for each fight, I need the international cards to be live. I need to watch Patricio Pitbull live. I'm tired of the tape delay. I know it likely won't happen, but I need that in my DAZN Bellator relationship.
Yeah, and you know, we talked about that, I don't know, what was it, probably about a month ago or so, that you know, that got, I brought up the fact of, you know, DAZN and Bellator basically, you know, sitting there and telling me what the plans were, you know, and Patricio Pitbull on Wednesday responding to quoting a Bellator tweet where he says, "There you have it, guys. It'll be on tape delay on DAZN 2. Sorry, it's not happening. It's something I cannot control, but I'll make sure to put on a great fight so you enjoy tuning in to watch it, even knowing what happens." And you know, for that show in Israel, it's a Thursday show over there. It's not going to air till Friday night here in the United States. And at that time, you know, I was, you know, I asked DAZN about it, I asked Bellator about it, and you know, it's not a quote unquote DAZN exclusive event. It's a simulcast, so it airs at the same time as it airs on Paramount. Which, you know, I mean, I think the unfortunate thing is that when this deal was announced with Bellator and DAZN, the perception I think everyone had was that it was going to end tape delay, but you know, that's not the case. And unfortunately, you know, you look at Patricio Pitbull, he's one of the best fighters in Bellator, and you know, we're going to have to wait over 24 hours to watch his fight against Manuel Sanchez, which, you know, is one of the best fights Bellator has left in the calendar, if not the best fight left in their calendar in 2018.
Yeah, man, it ruins an option that should just absolutely be there. And it's been a dead horse that we have beaten so severely that PETA is likely on our trails, because it just is a no-brainer. And it's one of those situations where somehow, some way, we're going to log on to Twitter the day of the fight, and we're going to see the finish, if there is a finish of that fight. If Ryan Couture busts out an inverted triangle choke, or if Phil Davis okay, that won't happen. I was going to say if he has a fun fight, but that likely won't happen. But if crazy things happen, Jason, before the Paramount broadcast, we will see it. And, yeah, I mean, I really thought DAZN was going to be the fix-all for that. Maybe long-term it will. But obviously for Bellator 209 in Israel, that won't be the case.
Yeah, it's just it's unfortunate. But, you know, it's something we talked about a couple weeks ago on the podcast. So, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I mean, look, overall, in terms of DAZN, I like it very good. I mean, we had another question related to Bellator DAZN. This came from Guz. He says, how good does the Bellator DAZN deal look now that they signed Canelo? I mean, for DAZN to get Bellator at that price point, it looks like a great deal. If you're Bellator, you might be sitting there looking at a deal going, man, should we have gotten more money?
Yeah, man, which is so funny, because when the deal was struck, man, we were like, man, Bellator did solid. They really sold their property at a great level, and that's really going to allow them potentially to sign some more consistently stars, you know, broaden that roster, which they'd been doing such a good job of. They sold their property at a great price point, and now you got to – it didn't take too long for them to look at the other girl at the party, the other guy at the party, and be like, man, you know, he's got some nice abs. Maybe I want those nice abs. You know, their jealousy is there. Obviously, Bellator isn't as attractive as Canelo Alvarez in his gingery hair. But, you know, they're counting down the days till the time they re-up the deal. And in terms of the biggest problem for Bellator, when the deal with DAZN was announced, one of the big issues I had with it, or one of the concerns, I think is a better way to say it, was eyeballs on DAZN. I was skeptical, because DAZN was not a known property at that time, that there would be a whole lot of eyeballs. But it does look like a great deal now, because eyeballs are very important. And when you have a fighter like Canelo, as well as some of the other boxers they put on there, the Joshua fight, for example, those eyeballs are going to be there. And that, to me, is the second part of the equation for Bellator. The first one is the financial aspect of the payday. But secondly, in order to build stars like Aaron Pico and grow your product, you need those eyeballs. And that relationship with DAZN looks like they picked the right partnership to be in with the acquisitions they've made. They just got to hope DAZN stays, you know, in business, because they are spending a lot of money. I'm sure they will. But that has to be a concern. That has to keep Scott Coker up at night sometimes. Like, man, where's all this money coming from?
Yeah, I mean, my thing with DAZN is more about, you know, when there's not a Bellator exclusive event on DAZN, will MMA fans continue to keep their subscription going, or do you make it a month to month thing, or are you like me when it comes to UFC Fight Pass, you always just forget to cancel it, then you see the charge on your credit card, and you're like, damn it, happens like every month for me, Daniel.
Yeah, I think that's how most people do subscriptions, man. Like, I recently changed debit cards, you know, I didn't change debit cards. This is what happened. I lost my debit card. So all my subscriptions, which, by the way, losing your debit card is the greatest thing ever, because it automatically cancels the 27 subscriptions you didn't know you had. You know, I look at my iPhone and I found out, oh, your Tinder Plus payment has declined. I'm like, thank God, I deleted that app 2 months ago. And so, oh, wow, I just admitted to Tinder Plus. That's a gap, hopefully. Girlfriend is not listening, but it's like no one, I mean, a few people do, those sticklers, no one cancels their subscription, Jason. It's just inconvenient. So I mean, that's the strategy, is you offer these deals. Like, I know the WWE Network is constantly offering, like, you get three months for $3, and the game plan is pretty simple. People don't unsubscribe. It's inconvenient, and I think most of us that do that initial monthly subscription, we're not going to unsubscribe until we lose our debit cards.
Exactly. But I mean, I'm to a point, like, I mean, I've got Netflix, I've got Amazon Prime, I've got DAZN, I've got Fight Pass. I mean, and look, at the beginning of 2019, I'll get ESPN Plus, even though I did find it interesting to see I saw the other day they're streaming 180 NHL games this year on ESPN Plus. So yeah, clearly there's a lot of gonna be a lot of content on there, and I'm interested to kind of see what happens there. Before we get into the Bellator events from last week, and gotta talk about Eddie Alvarez as he signs with ONE Championship. And you know, when Bellator announced that they were doing Primus Chandler on December the 14th. That was my clear sign that Eddie Alvarez clearly was not coming to Bellator, and all the rumblings are it's just Eddie asked for, amount of money that Bellator was not going to pay. And, I think the thing is I feel great for Eddie, man. Go out, get the money. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, has pretty much fought in every organization. You should be happy. And this signing is much different than when Ben Askren went to ONE Championships, just because, Ben was, still very young in his career. And we all wanted to see Ben in the UFC. We've seen Eddie in the UFC. So, I mean, to me, it's like, hey, man, cool, Eddie, go get that money.
Yeah, dude, go get that money. I mean, this is a business, first and foremost, and this is a business in which the practitioners, they're damaging themselves. I mean, you have to get your money. It's important to fall in love with the sport and being the best and competing against the best, but it's also important to financially be secure. And for Eddie Alvarez, this is a guy who nearly touched the sun in his fight with Conor McGregor, got as high as you can basically in the sport. And now he's 34 years old. And for him, I'm happy that he found a solid payday, I would assume, with ONE FC. As an MMA fan, I'm a little saddened because the matchups just aren't there in ONE FC past a few. You have Shinya Aoki. Obviously the only person people know when it comes to ONE FC, if you're a casual MMA fan, is Ben Askren. And that's obviously a fight that I think will get made just because, ONE FC is in the business of making intriguing fights, and Eddie Alvarez versus Ben Askren is the most intriguing fight they can make. So down the line, I anticipate that one. It's cool how things go full circle. I mean, when I first heard of Eddie Alvarez, it was when he was in Japan fighting for Dream in the lightweight tournament with Joachim Hansen and Tatsuya Kawajiri. I'm happy for him. And he also is appointment viewing television in that I did not see a single ONE FC show live in 2018. I mean, the last time I watched ONE FC top to bottom was the Ben Askren Shinya Aoki fight to end the year last year. And Eddie Alvarez, when he's on a ONE FC card, no matter who he's fighting, I'm going to go out of my way and I'm going to watch him because he's obviously a top 7, top 6, top 5 type lightweight. And so from that point of view, that's a great signing by ONE FC. They're not going to make their money back, I think. I'm not sure what their financial structure is, but in terms of pay-per-views or stuff like that. I mean, as great as Eddie Alvarez is, he's not a difference maker from that standpoint. But if you want to be notable on the MMA landscape, there was no better free agent than Eddie Alvarez.
Yeah, I mean, we actually had a question related to this signing, and this came from Seth saying, any chance of Askren Alvarez over at ONE? It seems like Askren could be testing the waters for another bout. I've always felt, and maybe Eddie will get Ben to want to have another fight in ONE Championship. But I've always kind of felt that if Ben Askren fights, it's in the UFC. And just as a fight fan that wants to see the best fight the best, and look, it's the days of the best fighters all being in ONE promotion are clearly over. I would, just as a fight fan, I would love to see Ben Askren in the UFC. I understand that. I know that it's unlikely it'll ever happen.
Yeah, it's a bit depressing because of how skilled he is, and there's always going to be big question marks about how great he actually was, because we couldn't measure him against the top lightweights of his generation. If I had a pick, it would be him in the UFC. But again, I know Ben Askren is basically semi-retired. I would be the way to put it. But, I'm going to watch any Eddie Alvarez fight. I will watch Alvarez versus Shinya Aoki. I mean, I think Alvarez will have plenty of success in that contest. But without a doubt, I mean, the fight I will go out of my way to watch live in ONE FC or ONE Championship is Ben Askren and Eddie Alvarez. It's a great fight, and be the first time in a long time Ben Askren, I think, has fought a top 10 fighter in the world.
Look, I know other people have mentioned this, but if somehow Ben Askren was signed by the UFC, you know the fight I want to see, right?
Which fight?
Ben Askren, Khabib Nurmagomedov.
Oh, man, that would be a hell of a fight.
I mean, really... if you do that like at a catch weight of like 165, if Ben would want to do that, if not, do it 170. Just from just the pure grappling aspect of those two guys, that's a fight that I would just love to see how it would play out.
Yeah, man, I would love that so much. I mean, I think in that fight, you know, Khabib is going to absolutely not look to wrestle. I mean, I know how great he is, but I just think you analyze both fighters. The difference is the striking from Nurmagomedov compared to Askren. But Askren's one of the best wrestlers we've ever seen fight in the sport. And look, we've seen the work Nurmagomedov's done. So, yeah, you sold me on that one. I am absolutely would watch Askren Nurmagomedov.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, happy for Eddie Alvarez. Of course, last weekend we had Bellator 207, 208. Also, we had PFL 9. Right now, we're going to talk about the Bellator events. I watched the Bellator event on Friday. I watched the main card live. I did watch Mike Kimble go out there and get the knockout in 6 seconds on the preliminary card. Bellator 208, the only fight that I actually watched live, I saw Pinson Henderson's post-fight interview live, which we'll talk about that here in a little bit. And I did watch Chael Sonnen versus Fedor. Let's go back first off on Friday night. Ryan Bader advances to the final to take on Fedor. A win over Matt Mitrione where, look, a smart game plan. A game plan that we both know there's a section of the MMA fan base that just is not going to care for that. Look, Ryan Bader went out there and did what he needed to do, and we shouldn't be surprised that that's how he got the win.
Yeah, man, between the two cards, Bellator 208 was just a little more fun to watch than Bellator 207, and a big part was the main event. I mean, this was domination from Ryan Bader. I mean, we had a 30-24 scorecard from the judges, a pair of 30-25s, but the fight itself wasn't particularly great. I mean, it was wrestle, 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 and that's the way he should have fought. I mean, with this matchup, the one aspect where you look at how Mitrione can win is tagging Bader and putting him away, and Ryan did a nice job of ensuring that possibility was minimized, and it was a clear-cut win for Bader. I mean, Fedor is the best case scenario, or one of the better cases. I mean, Fedor in the finals was best case scenario for Bellator, and they got that headed into the tournament. I mean, my prognosis was Ryan Bader was the most talented guy in the field, and that is playing true. I'm looking forward to Bader and Fedor, and I just thought for Ryan Bader it wasn't an A+ just because he didn't get the finish, and the fight itself wasn't super exciting. But from a technical standpoint, I mean, there's no way to criticize it. He went out there against a top Bellator heavyweight in Matt Mitrione and completely and totally outclassed him.
Yeah, and we'll talk about Fedor's win over Chael Sonnen here momentarily. The rest of that main card on Friday night, Sergey Kharitonov gets a knockout against Roy Nelson with 1 second left in the first round. A good stoppage there by Dan Mergliotta. I mean, Kharitonov just hit some massive shots on Roy. And, very one-sided win for Sergey Kharitonov. I mean, Roy really just didn't do much. I believe this is only the third knockout loss for Roy Nelson in his career. And, you know, I kind of feel like for Sergey Kharitonov, I mean, after losing to Javi Ayala, he's bounced back. I think he's 9-1 in his last 10 fights now. And to me, he's put himself in a situation of where maybe they could do Sergey against Vitaly Minnikov as a number one contender fight for the winner of that fight to fight the winner of the Grand Prix, or maybe it's even, you know, Sergey Kharitonov versus Chet Congo.
Yeah, I mean, you had the heavyweights under the main event slots. It was time to impress, and we saw it Congo the day after, and we saw with Kharitonov. That's what he did. He's absolutely in the mix. He's among the top title contenders with this win here. You don't have to do a lot in the Bellator heavyweight division because so many guys are tied up to climb up the mountain. But that's what Sergey's done. I mean, this fight was totally done after the trio of like illegal knees Kharitonov landed. I just felt like Nelson was out of it at that point, and he did fire up a little bit.
Okay, yeah. All right. Roy flopped though. when that's a flop. Come on. I mean, look, clearly an illegal knee. But based on how you're acting, and everyone on social media is like, oh, Roy just flopped.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look. Was Neymar impressed? Yes. But, Jesus, that's got to rock your brain a bit. And
what about, you think Manu Ginobili was impressed by that?
Yeah. Rarely do we see the NBA or soccer comparison with MMA. But, I mean, like, Nelson's a bit of an actor. But again, I think from that point forward, it was all Caratana. I mean, like it was domination.
There was never a point in that fight that I thought Roy was going to take it over.
Yeah. Yeah, I see you. I see that. And that's a hell of a win for Caratana. He's the guy I've ridden off at that earlier in his career.
And, oh, yeah. I mean, especially after he lost Ayala, I think everyone kind of wrote him off.
Yeah, which, what's the lesson here? Ayala is probably the best heavyweight in Bellator. I think that's what we can all agree on.
I don't think we'll all agree on that one. You know, this main card, it starts off with a knockout of the year candidate in Mandel Nalo knocking out Carrington Banks in the second round. And then we have Corey Browning upsetting Kevin Ferguson Jr. in the second round. You know, I mean, look, it was, you know, man, when I watched this fight, I'm sitting there going, oh, man, this is not great MMA. When you went back and watched the fight, because I was texting you about it, what's your thoughts after watching it?
My thoughts are this shouldn't have been on television. This was not suitable for television. I mean, if you're going to put MMA like this, these guys better have big names, right? It better be a freak show. And Baby Slice just isn't there. I mean, look, Baby Slice won most of the fight until he lost, you know. I give him that much.
That whole sequence in the second round where he goes from, like, one guy's about to win. Oh, no, the other guy's about to win. No, the other guy. I'm like, oh, my God, this is. And by the way, if you do want to hear Corey Browning, check out the Valor Hour Radio Influence. He did about a 20-minute interview with those guys where he just talked about everything and kind of talked about his experience in the whole situation. I mean, look, this is the reality of the situation. I think everyone knows this. You know, he was brought in to lose. Let's be honest about it. He was not expected to win this fight. You know, this was supposed to be, you know, another fight to kind of help build the Baby Slice brand. And you know what? And Corey Browning, you know, spoiled those plans.
Yeah, dude, like when Baby Slice is an 1,100 favorite or something like that, like things have gone awry. And it's just like, that's why I thought out of all the underdogs, you got to go with Browning just because, you know, Baby Slice just isn't there as a fighter. And all the credit to him for going through training camps and learning the trade. But he's living in the shadow of his father, and sometimes that shadow will pull you up. And you'll get exposed, and that's just what happened. I mean, if he continues to train and stuff, like, he probably will get at a solid level. But at this point, against Corey Browning, it was a place where he was put to not only win, but win impressively. And again, he did have moments of domination, but there was so much sloppiness with, you know, his inability to maintain really dominant positions and just get flipped on his head. It was rough. It was rough stuff to watch, especially coming off that Mando Nalo knockout and winning a great fight with Carrington Banks.
You know, I was watching The Shop on HBO, the LeBron James show. It's on there. I watched the first episode. Tremendous show. If you haven't watched it, it's a great show. But one of the things that LeBron talked about in the first episode was that he regrets naming his son after him. And you know, it made me kind of think of Kevin Ferguson Jr. I mean, look, he's always going to be under that shadow of his father. You know, we're going to have to see how he rebounds from this.
Yeah, and I know Bellator gave him another opportunity, as he should. You know, he has some semblance of a name, but again, maybe throw him on the Paramount Network. He just, to me, isn't main card material. You know, pick up a guy like Michael Kimball. I mean, he made his way onto at my local station that I work at, the news station. We have a veteran sports guy who comes in on Fridays and Wednesdays. And on Wednesdays, he does like a 60 sports seconds where he just gets random highlights from all across, you know, from Ultimate Frisbee to your sick NHL goal in hell. Michael Kimball, Bellator Cage, on my local 60 sports seconds. So, you know, he made it there. And again, in a card where you had this fight, you had the Lorenz Larkin Ian Pasco fight. This one just stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, well, that's very. It'll be interesting to kind of see how they develop Mike Kimble. I tweeted about this after his win. You know, Bellator needed to find a new kind of star for that Mohegan market, a ticket seller, with Brandon Ward, you know, leaving MMA, and they might have found that in Mike Kimble. They're both from the same town. And of course, on Saturday we had Bellator 208. I mentioned I watched Fedor versus Shell live. It was the only fight that I watched live. You know, there was one point where I thought the fight was about to end, where kind of, you know, Shell kind of turtled up and I'm like, oh, it's over. But then he bounces back from it. And then, you know, I wasn't following, you know, social media as the fight was going on. But then, you know, Sunday morning, I'm going through all the websites and I see this story on MMA Junkie about Scott Coker responding to people's thought process that the fight was fixed, which clearly, I mean, it's not a fixed fight, folks. And it makes me wonder why this always comes up with Bellator. Is it because of other things, and there's a reason people don't mention it with other promotions, but it seems like when this stuff does come up in MMA, more times than not, it's about Bellator, which, look, there's no quit. This was not a fixed fight, folks. This was not a fixed fight.
Yeah, it's lame. It's lame, and it comes up with Bellator. I mean, it's hardly ever come up with the UFC. I mean, it's lame. I mean, look, guys, I love me some conspiracy theories. If there's ever a fixed fight, I'll smell it out. I'll talk about it. This wasn't it. This was a great fight. I mean, a hell of a main event. I really loved it. Between Fedor and Chael, it did have tips and turns with advantages from both guys. But I mean, Fedor finishing late. I mean, this was a fight that Chael absolutely wanted to win. He wanted to win the heavyweight championship and continue to be a part of the focus. But just best case scenario for Bellator, getting Fedor Emelianenko to the finals. You know, he doesn't look like a world beater heavyweight for sure, but he looks a whole hell of a lot better than that dark day when I saw him on a grainy video against Fabio Maldonado. He looks so much better than that point. It just, you know, Fedor, like when during that Maldonado fight, it's like when you watch those DDP yoga videos where it's like you have Scott Hall drunk as hell. You know, your life's falling apart, and all of a sudden, DDP with a couple stretches puts his life together, and you have a sober Scott Hall and a sober Jake Roberts. I mean, this looks like a sober Fedor. He has returned to form, and he got the win over Chael. And again, this was a hell of a fight. I really, really enjoyed it.
You know, this question we got about Fedor, this came from Clay saying, can Fedor's Bellator fights hurt or hinder his career reputation? I don't think it hurts his career reputation at all. I mean, people are still going to kind of have the same thoughts about Fedor. But I watching that fight, I sat there and I go, Ryan Bader's going to win this tournament.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there's just a clear difference. We watched the day before and we watched the day of Bellator 208. Ryan Bader is the one guy who is just a step faster. The skills are there. And you aren't going to see those. You know, you aren't going to see a guy in top get swept in a Ryan Bader fight. He's going to keep – I mean, Fader's going to present a great guard against Ryan Bader, but I think we're going to see a fight where Ryan's incredibly successful with the wrestling, and he rains down blows, and I think we're going to see maybe a second-round finish. But again, I don't think this hinders his legacy at all. In fact, I think this has been a positive, the Bellator run for Fedor after his first fight. The first fight, against Mitrione. Probably a negative on the legacy. But again, I think everything's set in stone. Much like, you know, Chuck Liddell's legacy is still going to be there as a guy who was so pivotal for the UFC. As embarrassing as whatever his fight with Tito may be, it's still locked in stone. I mean, the only thing that really hurts your legacy in these sports is like committing a crime. You know, if you commit a crime, like, yeah, we're going to forget. Or, you know, even Jens Pulver, with the way his career ended, you still kind of remember the highs of his career, and the same goes for BJ Penn. So it takes a lot to really hurt your legacy in the sport, but it's hard to have that conversation when Fedor's advanced to the finals of the tournament.
Yeah, and I mean, look, let's be honest about it. A lot of us wrote off Fedor a couple years ago. You know, we mentioned about Vitaly Minnikov a little while ago, and we got this question from Dirty Bird. He says, do you think Minnikov should get an immediate title shot or have to sit out for refusing to fight all those years? I mean, I think it really depends on who comes out of Bader and Fedor. My guess is that you probably see Minnikov. I think the likelihood is he gets an immediate shot at whoever wins this tournament. But, you know, if he's looking to fight here in the next 3 months or so, you know, I definitely see that he fights someone. I mean, I think it's probably a good idea to have him on that January 26th card when Fedor and Ryan are going to fight.
From a sporting standpoint, it's Minnikov running away for the guy who deserves the title shot. I mean, I think when you look at the list of guys, it's obviously Karatanov's there. I mean, Czech Congo, you know, it was a great Bellator weekend when Czech Congo was a part of an interesting Bellator fight. And that's what happened against Timothy Johnson. I mean, he looked great getting that 68-second knockout victory over Johnson. Minnikov's there. I think if Bader wins, we're going to see Minnikov-Bader. But I think if Fedor wins, I think if you're Bellator, if Fedor wins the heavyweight title, I think the challenger you're looking for, that first challenger, is Fedor versus Rampage Jackson.
Yeah, that's a great idea there, and obviously that'd be a fight that would bring a lot of viewers. Now, the co-main event, Benson Henderson gets the decision win. I mean, obviously, you know, you can kind of look at, you know, I guess, you know, it's only considered, I guess, cheating if they actually call you out for it, the grabbing of the gloves and other things, but he gets the win. But the post-fight speech, am I the only one that had this thought process? Because it came out before the fight of how his Bellator contract was coming to an end. Was I the only one sitting there thinking, is Benson Henderson trying to set himself up to fight Khabib Nurmagomedov inside the UFC cage?
I didn't have that thought process, but man, you better... If he wants to make that bank account bigger, that's the game plan. I mean, yeah, the little holier-than-thou speech. I mean, it was nice, but it was a bit holier-than-thou, especially when he talks about all that stuff and you go and you cheat in the fight. Like, come on, don't cheat. But yeah, you know, it was an interesting post-fight talk. I think it was a post-fight talk that generated more news interest than basically anything else he could have said. I mean, it's like the MO for any fighter is just mention Conor and Khabib in your post-fight interview and people will talk about it. And that's what we got, Benson Henderson kind of scolding them about how, you know, how are your kids going to look at that? And, you know, he's right. You know, mm-hmm, that's a weird thing. You can't tell little Timmy to behave in class when you jumped the cage and did a swanton bomb into the crowd. But, yeah, it's like, yeah, it's a little cheesy for me. But, I mean, you know, Benson's kind of a cheesy guy, you know. Great fight for him. He looked pretty good against Syed Awad, completely out grappling him, and it was a solid performance. But again, he just still has not really been on that level where I even think of him in the same hemisphere as Nurmagomedov or McGregor.
The rest of this main card, Czech Congo gets a win at the 1:08 mark of the first round knockout against Timothy Johnson. Anatoly Tokov gets a decision win over Alexander Shemenko. Henry Corrales, who was a guest on the podcast last week, gets a knockout win against Andy Main. I mean, you know, kind of, you look at Shemenko, I mean, this is a guy of, you talk about how little things in this sport can alter your career. I mean, what if he would have got that decision win against Gegard?
Yeah, it's crazy because this is a really tough loss to Anatoly Tokov. But, I mean, had he won that fight with Gegard, you're talking about just return to form. I mean, a guy who used to be the Bellator middleweight champion, and it's like, Jesus, he's one of the best guys. And since then, instead of riding a 6-fight win streak, he has 3 consecutive losses in a row, and then in this fight with Anatoly Tokov. I mean, this wasn't a close contest. This was a clear decision win for Anatoly Tokov, who looked good at middleweight. And yeah, I mean, just a bit of a bummer for Alexander Shlemenko, and it's hard to look at him and think we'll see him a part of that middleweight title picture again.
Yeah, just kind of how the career trajectory has gone for him. But Tokov, definitely interested in seeing what happens with him. That is Bellator 207 and Bellator 208. Coming up next, you're going to hear three fighter interviews. Up first, you're going to hear Bubba Jenkins as he's going to recap winning the Brave Featherweight title. Also talk about what's next. Then you're going to hear from Abdiel Velasquez, who's going to be a part of Bare Knuckle FC3 on Saturday in Mississippi as he takes on Sean West. And the final interview will be with Chris Montino, who's going to be fighting on November the 2nd at CES MMA 53. So up first is my conversation with Bubba Jenkins. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that we've had a chance to talk to in the past, and he came off a title win at Brave last month. It is Bubba Jenkins. Bubba, man, as always, I appreciate the time. I was thinking about you, of course, how it ended in Bellator and ACB and to where you are now. How would you describe the last 2 years?
Man, I would describe them the same way I described the end of my college career. You know, it was a lot of a roller coaster. I mean a lot of bit by saying, man, there was a lot going on and left and right. I mean, I had a little bit of doubts here and a little bit of doubts there. And, you know, I knew I was really good and were becoming really good. And I would say that I was also in fighter purgatory where, you know, they don't want to pay you what you're worth, but you can't take any other thing because, you know, you're a professional fighter and you gotta eat. So you gotta make the right decisions, and you're a wrestler with a good record, beating some really good guys. And so nobody wants to fight you without the belt because they have no reason to try to get beat the hell out of, as we saw, you know, in recent fight. You know, you can't mess with those wrestlers, grapplers, the guys that are, I mean, we're basically land sharks. So, long story short, man, the last 2 years have been a learning experience. The roller coaster has definitely pushed me into a level of greatness, but also a level of like, man, let's get some things in order, because that was definitely chaotic. Not only chaotic, but that was definitely something that like made me sick to my stomach, because I mean, it was the true roller coaster.
Is it more about learning about the business side of the sport as opposed to the actual going out performing side?
Well, this is my seventh year. So I would say a collective effort of learning the business side and the performance side, mostly the performance side of MMA, getting all of the conditioning and all of the punches and all of that, getting the rounds, knowing when you can break. The performance side was very big on the last 2 years. The business side was always a part of it. You know what I mean? When you first get into the game, you got to deal with business people. You know what I mean? So the business snakes and the business geniuses and the business, you know, knowing that there's no union, knowing that there's no protection, as the sport was getting bigger, growing all these organizations, fighters were just jumping on with any man who said they had a good phone contact list, and, you know, they didn't really know what they were doing and got hurt early. And that was a little bit of my demise, a little bit, not my demise because I never failed, but a little bit of, you know, the thing that I fell into. But it was learning the business as of the last 2 years, holding a position that we actually held. In the beginning, holding those positions weren't so strong because we were just starting. We were babies. We weren't proven in Bellator. We weren't proven in the sport of MMA. We were proven as wrestlers. We were proven as well-spoken athletes. We were proven as smart, you know, young. And yes, obviously we were proven as handsome, but as far as in the game, we were not proven. So we can definitely mark that as something that I was trying to figure out in the last 2 years, to be in the position of power with proven abilities.
How is it different fighting internationally as opposed to here in the United States?
Well, everything feels like an away game. So if you've ever been an athlete and you've played an away game from your home game, that's what every fight feels like. But if you have the kind of pull that I have, man, I usually go in being hated. And during the fight week, man, I usually come out being one of the favorites. You know, people actually cheer for me. By the time I get to the cage, between, you know, leading up to the cage and things, you know, you as you're a fighter, you get the sensitivity of what's around and the atmosphere of who they want to win, who the organization wants to win, who the crowd, the fans, you know, who social media. You get a pull of, you know, what's going on. So as you know. Either you're on the fan side and people are all about you and you got to be smart, you know, not overlook the guy you're about to fight, or you're on that away game side like a lot of these overseas fights are, and you're looking to, you know, buckle down, make the smart decisions, Man, I change rooms a lot with my cornermen just to make sure that they can't find me. And you say it's paranoia, but you know, people have knocked on my door at random hours. My cornermen come to me and tell me that, you know, that kind of thing happens. So, you know, it's pretty cool. But I mean, as we also travel, man, if you get with the right organization, like I'm with, you know, Brave, I mean, they really, really did a great job of building their organization from the ground up, of having great fundamental ethics, great morality. I mean, great understanding of their athletes and who they're working with. I mean, they want to be truly global. They're one of the only true global organizations, as far as like, they don't really care where their champion's from. They just want to make sure there's a bunch of champions from all over the world. They're not trying to push, a certain demographic of an athlete, not demographic, but a certain race or anything. They just want to say, you know, hey, if you want to become a champion, bring your flag and rep your city, rep your state, rep your country. And they want to bring the world closer through combat. That was one of the big things that Sheikh Khalid wanted to do, was bring the world closer through combat. And I believe in that wholeheartedly. You know, I'm a biblically driven man, so I'm thinking love first. So last 2 years fighting overseas have been much of everything I just said.
I mean, you got the win to claim the featherweight title. I mean, how do you assess your performance against Elias? I mean, do you sit back and look at it? Are you more that guy that you more look at the things that you didn't perform the way you want to, as opposed to what you did well?
Man, I haven't got to see the fight yet, only because I really wanted to watch it with my friends and family. And, you know, when I got to the friends and family part, the fight on TV, we couldn't get the computer to transfer it to the TV or whatever. You know how when the game time comes on, it works. When when you're by yourself, it works. When everyone comes over, it sucks. But so right now I'm working on getting the video of it, and I'll just probably watch it by myself, analyze it, put some headphones on, and really, really dig into looking at the video. From what I can remember, man, I remember my jab being really well placed. I was striking going backwards, but not at the level that I did. I believe I did during camp. You know, I could have cleaned some things up. There are some things that I obviously, because I won so dominantly, I don't want to sound like that guy. Like, oh, well, you know, that wasn't my best performance. I could do better, but I'm not that guy. But also I do know, with garnering to be a world champion, with wanting to be the greatest, I'm not 100% satisfied with just winning the belt. Obviously, I feel like there was a time or two that I could have stepped forward and pushed on the gas, maybe finished him. I maybe dragged him through the fight a little bit. I mean, if I fight him again because of the trash talking he's been talking about, I will put him out. We will not go to championship rounds, because he will know then that he is no longer a championship fighter. I will finish him before the third round. But that's another day for another time. We'll build that. We'll build that later. But right now, my focus is on defending the title and really just bringing Brave to America, bringing America to Brave, bringing my biggest fans, my wrestling community, my MMA community that I've garnered through other organizations, and bringing them to Brave and letting everybody know that, like, this is the new wave. This is where things need to be done at.
I mean, are you kind of, you know, hinting at them about that first title defense, maybe to be in Virginia, maybe to be in Arizona?
Man, if we did a title defense in Virginia, that would be madness, absolute madness. But no, man, I haven't been hinting at that. I know they got some things set up. We have a meeting in a couple of days where we sit down and really get an understanding of what we want, what they want. You know, this is different than us signing with, you know, an organization that's a conglomerate where, you know, they make all the rules and you just follow the dance and song. You know, we have a little bit of understanding between, you know, organization heads and fighters, and you know, it's a great relationship when you can do it that way, because I really want to put on for them. I really want to perform. I really want to, you know, sell the fights and, you know, tell people about Brave. And, you know, it really makes for me to have, you know, that want to be excited about my organization. So
would fighting in Virginia be like a bucket list item for you?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We take a fight to Virginia, bro, it would be madness. Madness. That's definitely a bucket list for sure. And that's something that I obviously talk about with every organization. I don't think anybody was wanting to hear me yet, because ain't nobody trying to make that real money. Because we go to Virginia, man, you're talking about Maryland, you're talking about North Carolina, you're talking about the surrounding areas. I mean, I wasn't just big in Virginia. I was a national champion in high school. So nationally, I was known around the nation, but definitely in the DMV area, definitely in the East Coast, but for sure in Virginia, but I'm talking the East Coast. So you bring a fight to, I haven't fought in the East Coast maybe but one time, you know what I mean? And it was kind of like, it wasn't the deal. It was like, I didn't have any power at the time. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to be main event. It was on some prelim, get out there, do what you can type of thing, you know? But now that I come as a champion, or now that I come up with a crew and, you know, I'm established a little bit, it's game time in a sense, you know what I mean?
So we now know the nickname is now the Bad Man. So how did this come together where you decide this is going to be the nickname?
Okay, well, naturally, it's a double entendre because I'm a bad man is what it completely is. I'm a bad man stands for in memory of Muhammad Ali. I was a big Muhammad Ali fan. He was someone I grew up off of really learning his ways, learning his styles, learning how to be communicate, learning how to elocute yourself, learning how to be not only the show, but also be a stupendous athlete. Be supreme in all your ways, have footwork that is unmatchable, you know, things like this that I've studied from him to be great. And, you know, most athletes will tell you they had a mentor that they wanted to follow after. And if you truly, truly study the greats, if you listened well enough, like I did and a lot of other athletes did, they would give you the game for free. The best athletes in the world give away their game for free because all the cameras are always on them. The light is always on them. So Muhammad Ali was someone that I looked at and, you know, studied and tried to learn his ways and do my own thing. I'm actually an athlete that does my own thing, but, you know, Muhammad Ali was someone I looked up to. So in the memory of Muhammad Ali was I'm a bad man because, you know, I'm a bad man. He always said it, but I also was always being called, man, you a bad man. You a bad man. Always growing up, people would call me a bad man. So the mix of the changing of the name, I'm obviously 30 with three kids. I can no longer be the highlight kid. And it was rendering me a little bit of an angry part of me a little bit that I wasn't getting the highlights that I was looking for. It was actually my nickname that I given highlight kid actually hampered my fighting style because a lot of times I was looking to do the highlights and stuff like that or looking to be the nickname that was, you know, basically kind of falling off of me. And I realized that I'm always going to be a bad man. I'm always going to do some bad things as far as like fighting goes. And, you know, and people know when you see the bad man and, you know, I've worn the mask, I've worn the bad guy character for a long, long time. No matter how lovely I am in person, when you meet me with my friends, family, everybody who truly knows me loves me, but the people who don't know me, they treat me as this villain or this bad guy. A lot of the organizations want to paint me as the character of having the bad guy, you know, so I might as well, you know, wear it proudly. But like, it's like I said, double entendre, because I'm truly, truly a good guy wrapped in the bad man nickname doing bad things in the cage.
And of course, so we look forward to seeing when that next fight in Brave may take place. Of course, let everyone know where they can follow you on social media, your sponsors, all that type of stuff, man.
Man, I gotta plug my sponsors, Athletic CBD, man. Before y'all know where to find me, you gotta go check out Athletic CBD, doing amazing things out here in California and all around the country with CBD and the new muscle movement. I want to thank Garden of Life, obviously Iridium, my team in Iridium, my agency. You know, they're doing great things. I gotta tag Brave, man. Brave organization. If y'all haven't seen the fight card, I mean, I was in the back getting nervous because they were putting on such a great show, man. Go check out Brave, my combat federation, man. They're a great organization. And man, we just Bubba J, y'all can find me coming with some new content, man. I'm not gonna tell y'all where to search me. I'm gonna let it blank so y'all come search me because I'm dropping some new heat. I got a whole new marketing team, a whole new content team that I'm dropping. I'm a world champion now, and I'm gonna start proving that to not only in the cage but in my social media realm. Like I've been living a contender life with my social media, so now it's time to up it, baby. It's time to go. So y'all look me up and here we go, man. Be excited to be on the train. If it's getting too bumpy, all you newbies jump off.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that's going to be a part of the Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships event coming up on October the 20th in Mississippi. It's Abil Vasquez. Of course, we've had Abby on the podcast before. Abby, I really appreciate the time. The first Bare Knuckle fight. So when your team comes to you and says, hey, we've got an opportunity for you to compete in Bare Knuckle, do you remember your first thought?
I'm like... Yeah, and my first thought about that when they come to me and they saw it's out of nowhere, I'm like, shit, why not? I'll take it. You know, people don't do these often, and I don't know who, you know, not a lot of people will get into it, you know, because they don't want to get their face damaged. But me, I'm a fighter. I love to fight. I'll go out there and bang. That's what I love.
obviously we've talked to you about your MMA fights in the past, but how does the preparations different for a bare knuckle fight as opposed to an MMA fight? I mean, obviously, you don't have to worry about the ground aspect, but in terms of, you know, when you're sparring, I mean, do you spar bare knuckle? Do you still, you know, spar with gloves? How does that work?
I spar with gloves. I spar with, like, my hand wraps, you know, so, you know, I don't, you know, hurt my guys and stuff. And I also spar with my MMA gloves, too, so at least I get a little, you know, feeling of how it's going to be. You know, I also, like, I train, to condition your bare knuckles is, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, because it's all hands, and, you know, you hit the bags. I hit the bag with, you know, your spare hands, just hitting the bags and everything. And, you know, you just got to condition your knuckles, you know. My coach B come in and got me doing, like, cinder blocks push-ups, you know. He had 2 cinder blocks, and, like, he got me in those, just all knuckles, and I'm just hitting them. I'm just sitting cinder blocks push-ups, and my knuckles are, like, killing me from those. It was intense in training for bare knuckles.
I mean, obviously, a lot of combat sports is the recovery of making sure your body's going to be at peak performance by the time fight night gets here. In terms of bare knuckle, do you find yourself doing anything different just to kind of, keep the hands where you want them to be for October 20th?
Repeat that question one more time.
In terms of, you know, obviously you're doing all these, you know, things after you're done training to keep your body in peak shape. But in terms of your hands, since it's a bare knuckle and you talk about some of the things you're doing to prepare for this fight, I mean, do you ice your hands down maybe more than maybe you would if you're preparing for an MMA fight?
Yeah, you gotta ice your hands, you know, rest them, you know, because you can break your hand easily, you know, in a bare knuckles fight. It just takes one good hit, or, you know, you hit one guy and, you know, it breaks. You know, when you punch in, you gotta punch correctly. That's what my coach, you know, Coach B is telling, you know, told me, you know, you gotta punch correctly, because, you know, not correctly, and so, you know, break something, you can break a knuckle, you can break a wrist. So, you know, it is, ice your hands a lot, you know, rest it as much as you can, because it's going to, you know, you're going to be fighting, hand, you know, bare knuckles and hitting the face, body, and it comes quick.
Now, when you took this fight and you put it out there, hey, I'm fighting bare knuckle, was there anybody maybe in your family, your friends, like, maybe looked at you like, really, you're taking a bare knuckle fight?
Yeah, no, I got a lot of people telling me I'm crazy, or my family, my mom, sister, even my wife. You know, I had to talk to her into it. You know, I was like, oh, come on, babe. You know, it's the once time. You know, not a lot of people will do this. You know, I have a lot of people telling me I'm crazy, and, you know, it's dangerous. You know, like, it's you know, it's bare knuckles. You know, if you go and get hit in the face, it's like you can get harm into it. You know, you get conditioned, head concussion or so. You know, damaging your head, but. You know, I'm already doing MMA. I'm already taking risks already. I'm putting my body out there already. So I'm still like, let's do another challenge. Let's see what's up there.
You know, in terms of this challenge and this being your first bare knuckle, is it one of those things for you of, let me see how this thing goes, and then, you know, kind of decide after the fight or whether you do another bare knuckle fight, or is the mindset already thinking about, well, we got this first one, and we're worried about, you know, Sean Weston getting through this one, but are you already thinking about maybe the second bare knuckle fight?
Yeah, I'll take, you know, I would like to see how this comes out and everything, because I want to open my areas, open my, you know, my stuff, you know, because I could do boxing, I could do, you know, kickboxing. I want to open my, you know, my areas, you know, so I could, you know, do more stuff, you know. MMA is a good thing and everything, but, you know, it's, you know, you gotta put your body out there, and so, and I don't want to, you know, I want to take other stuff, other adventures, and so, but yeah.
I mentioned Sean West, the opponent here, at 135 pounds. Of course, we're used to seeing you at 125 pounds. What's your thoughts about Sean as an opponent?
Oh, it's going to be a great fight. I respect him as a fighter. I saw a couple of his fights, MMA fights and stuff, and his record is decent. You know, I give him respect for, you know, coming out and accepting the fight, you know, to fight me and everything. But, you know, I'm going to come out there and, you know, I'm going to come out there with the win. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm going to come out there and just, you know, end it quick. Because, I mean, I'm a quick guy. I'm a 125er. I fight 35er, too. And I like it. I like it because he fights 45er, and we can meet in the middle, 20, you know, after 35, and we'll see who's the best. It could be a lightweight or welterweight, so lightweight or heavier guy.
I mean, in terms of this being 135, have you ever thought about maybe moving up to 35 on a permanent basis in an MMA fight?
Yeah, I've been thinking about it because there's not a lot of 25ers out there in my area and so, and not a lot of people want to take, you know, fight me as a 25er. So, you know, I'm trying to open my options here too. You know, I want to go over there and, you know, see what I'm at 35. You know, I know I got to bulk up a little bit, but other than that, it should be good.
In terms of your MMA career, I mean, is there a plan kind of after this fight of what would be next for you in terms of MMA, or is it simply one of those things of I have to see how this fight unfolds before I start thinking about the next step?
Knuckle Bears tournament, you know, like either way, if I get eliminated or, you know, when I win the whole thing, like I still wanted to fight, you know, for bare knuckles if, you know, I get the option. But, you know, my MMA career, I still want to fight MMA. That's my passion. That's where I started it. I'm not going to end it like, you know, I'm not going to end my career like that. I still got a lot of future ahead of me. You know, I'm young and, you know, I want to fight, you know, to get up to the UFC.
Of course, anybody that follows you on social media, they'll see as much of your fighter always posting pictures with your young son. What's the toughest part of your day? You know, taking care of your son or actually going in the training room?
Both actually. But mostly taking care of my son. You know, I don't like leaving him. You know, I like spending time with him. He's my world. You know, I love him. I like, you know, I always think of him. I train my ass off just so I can get a future with him. You know, get taken care of. And that's what, you know, that's something to fight for. And that's what I like. I get motivated and, you know, and I train my ass off just for him.
And you know, I've seen, you know, pictures where you bring him to the training room with him. When he gets that age, will you try to shy him away from the fight game?
No, of course not. No, because, you know, he's already newer in the fight game. He knows how to really take me down for a little guy. He knows how to do armbar grips and stuff. So, you know, he's already know how to ground and pound. He sees me doing bag work and everything, so he's copying everything I do. So, yeah, when he gets a little bigger, I'm not afraid to show him a little bit. And so, and you know, you gotta also, you know, stand up for himself too. You know, you gotta, you know, with, you know, when it comes to bullies and all that, he gotta be ready for it if anything comes.
As we're talking, we're under 2 weeks from this fight. So, what's the next 10 days like for you as you prepare for this matchup?
A lot of work, a lot of cardio. You know, I've been doing a lot of hands, getting my hands quicker. Just working as much as I can until the day of the fight. You know, because I'm going to be flying out early, so you know, I just want to get as trained as much in, do as much as I can, and do as much cardio as I can, because I know it's going to be a quick fight, tense fight. You know, it's 2 minutes, not as MMA fight. You know, but it's going to be quicker, so I want to feel good. And I know in Mississippi, it's going to be different, the elevation and everything. So I want to be prepared.
And, of course, it all goes down here on October 20th. Abby, as always, man, I appreciate the time. And let everyone know where they can follow you out on social media.
Thank you so much for having me. And so, and, yeah, you guys can follow me on social media on Instagram at abdio.velasquez.mma. Also, you can follow me on my Facebook, abdio.velasquez.mma also. Also, I got a website, abbymma.com.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man that steps back inside competition, CES 53, come up on November 2nd, Chris Montino. Chris, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Looking for your third straight win here. How would you describe the last year for you after, you know, dropping those two fights and to where you were there then to where you are now? I mean, how would you describe kind of, you know, the differences in yourself?
Just a roller coaster, man. Roller coaster of emotions. I'm much better mentally than I was when I lost those two fights. I wasn't clicking with my training. I wasn't training the way I should, and wasn't doing the things I fell out of love with grappling and rolling and wrestling like I used to when I started this sport. That's all I had. You know what I mean? And then I got used to punching people in the face and fell in love a little too much. And now I'm back to a right mindset, training with the right people,
and got the right looks outside of just my gym. So everything started to click better and everything started to flow. So I'm just stronger mentally, man, than I was ever in my career.
I've heard that so many times from fighters just say, man, if mentally you're just not there, you're not going to be able to perform the way you want to. Was that something that, say 18 months ago you realized, or was it something that it just kind of, because of bad things that happened, it made you realize that?
Kind of like after the first fight, after the first drop, I kind of thought it was just like, oh, you messed up a little bit here. It wasn't really like, it didn't really click in my head. Like, you have to fix some certain things. Like, I thought my training was fine. I train the same way all the time. I do this, I do that. After the second one, I was like, all right, you need to take a step back, take some time off MMA. I still did Muay Thai. I had a Muay Thai fight in that time, and I still was competing and still training. But I was like, just take a look back. Went, started really training, really focusing on my ground game, focusing on my wrestling again. The next fight came out, man. It was all smiles. So that's pretty much what it was, man. Just fix my brain, fix the weakness that I had in my brain that was telling me that I wasn't good enough, and that's what we did.
And you're coming off that win at CES 51. I mean, as you have gone back and looked at that fight, I mean, if you had to grade yourself in terms of your performance on that night, what grade would it be?
And I still didn't get the finish, so we still get a C, but it's all right, man. He was a very, very, very tough opponent. Really had to dig deep. He was much better in all these areas, in the areas of striking, in the areas of just pressure. Than I thought he was gonna be, and I still did what I did, man. I still went out there, still kept the pressure, still kept the pace, and I ended up getting the win. This kid's gonna be no different, man. They're from the same camp, they train together. This kid's all I'm focusing on right now, man. The last fights, anything I did in the last fights, I've already fixed that. I'm 100 times better than I was that last fight, so I'm just ready to go, man. Ready to show this kid that. Doesn't matter what they think they learned from that last fight. It's not going to help them. I'm still pushing that pace. I'm still not going to get tired, and I'm still looking to finish this fight.
Before we get to James, in terms of, I know you've talked about this in other interviews about, you know, obviously the goal is to go out there and get the finish. I mean, do you kind of feel like, does that eat at you after a fight when you're unable to get that finish, but you still get the victory?
Kinda. It's a little disappointing, man. Like everybody's like, oh, I just want the win. Oh, you got the win. It doesn't mean the same thing to me. You know what I mean? The UFC doesn't just look at wins, man. Everybody's just winning. There's hundreds of guys that are winning. Doesn't mean anything. What they look at is how well did you win? Did you finish the fight? Are you looking to finish the fight the whole time? That's what I'm trying to be, man. I'm trying to get to the next level. And period. Like, it's fun fighting for CES. It's fun fighting locally. It's fun fighting all these places. But it's not the top yet. You know what I mean? So if I'm not there, what I want in this sport is to be known as the best to ever do this. And if I'm not there, then I'll never be able to be that. So that's what I'm working for.
And you mentioned about your opponent, James, here, coming from the same team as your last opponent, Blackshear. You know, were you familiar with James before getting this fight offer?
No, I didn't even know who he was. They offered me a couple guys. He was the fight that made sense. He has a good record. He's all his wins come by finish. Man, he's tough, man. He's a tough fighter, and his only losses are against really tough guys. One of the kids is fighting for the title that night. So, man, I'm just looking for the best names possible. Like, I've always taken hard fights, and this kid's not going to be any different. So, these are the type of fights I'm going to get, and I'm going to look for the hardest ones I possibly can get.
You mentioned about the challenges and what makes this fight tough for you. What do you think is the biggest challenge that James is going to offer you in this matchup?
Most of his fights have been at 45, so he's going to be a little bit bigger than me. It's not different than anybody else. They're always bigger than me. I'm always a small guy out there, so I'm not. There's not any one specific thing, man. He's coming to wrestle. I fought wrestlers before. I fought bigger wrestlers than him, so. It's just all in me, man. Just keep my mind right. Stay out there, go out there and do what I like to do, man. And I'm going to put a hole in his face. That's it.
You know, looking at the 135-pound division and CES, obviously the champion's now gone. In the UFC, which is your kind of thought process of this fight? Is it this fight could propel you into a title shot? Is that kind of the immediate thought?
Well, a kid I trained with fighting for the title that night. I trained with Pava and all that stuff, so I'm not really looking at 35. He's going to win the belt, so unless he gets brought up to the UFC right afterwards, I'm not really looking at the 35 belt. 45 belt might look nice. I might put that on my wall. So let's see what happens, man. I can start talking after I win, but right now I got to win.
Is there a certain way you see the victory coming in this one? I mean, as you have visualized, you kind of feel like, hey, I ultimately see the finish coming in a certain way.
If I was gonna have to guess, man, I'm looking to push a pace, man. I'm looking to take him out on my feet. Stop his takedowns, take him out on my feet. But if it goes to the ground, I'm ready for that too. I got jiu-jitsu. People think I don't have jiu-jitsu. I can tap people out, I promise.
Why do you think people think you don't have a jiu-jitsu game?
It's just because I got away from it and a couple guys tapped me out. You know what I mean? They're good. They're good fighters, man. Stuff happens, man. I can't kick back those losses. I'm not going to ask to. Man, they helped me to get to where I am right now, to get to the mentality that I'm in right now. And I'm just looking to just move on, man. Move on, grow, get better, better, better. I'm still young, man. I'm 26. I'll be there within the next couple of years.
Does it piss you off that people underestimate certain aspects of your game? Or is it like, I can't control what people say, so I'm not going to worry about it?
Yeah, it's more like that, man. I don't care. You can think whatever. I've never been in a gym where I don't give people work. You know what I mean? I've been in this sport 6 years now, and there's never been a time where I go into the gym and I'm like, you're that much better than me. And I train with UFC caliber fighters. I train with all these high level fighters, man. And there's never a time where I'm like, oh, you're that much better than me. So I'm comfortable where I'm at, man. And I've had to come up a completely different way, man. I've come up completely tough in this sport. You have to just keep going, grinding. Fought the toughest guys. I fought guys killing in the UFC right now. In my amateur record's tougher than most people's pro record. So I'm not worried about what other people think about me. I'll get there, and I'm just going to keep going out there to win.
In terms of just who you are as a person, is there anything that the fight fans would be surprised to know about you?
Nah, man, I'm pretty boring. Not much, man. I just work and watch Netflix. That's pretty much all I do besides training, man.
All right, what's the go-to show on Netflix right now for you?
Right now? I don't know. My girlfriend works in special needs, so we started the show Atypical. So that's pretty much it, man.
And of course, everyone's going to watch your fight here, November 2nd, CES MMA 53. Of course, airs live on Access TV. Chris, as always, I appreciate time, and of course, let everyone know where they can follow you out on the various social media channels.
Yeah, you can follow me and search my name up on Facebook, Instagram. You can search me, RexKitty_Chris, and then just got a Twitter recently, so you can get it's at Tino Chris. There we go, got you.
Thanks, Chris, man. Good luck in the fight.
All right, thank you very much, man.
And there was my conversations with Bubba Jenkins, Abdiel Velasquez, and Chris Montino. Of course, Abdiel Velasquez is a guy that I've got a chance to know over the past couple of years, local fighter here in the Tampa Bay area. Very interesting to kind of hear his thought process of getting the opportunity to fight bare knuckle. Of course, if you want to watch that, that's on Saturday night on Fight TV for $29.99. We'll see what happens with Bubba Jenkins raving about Brave FC, and then Chris Montino, a local fighter out of the Northeast scene. Looks how he continues to develop. But Daniel, last weekend, we had PFL 9 as the lightweight and light heavyweight tournament did start up. We now have our finals there, and I think I said on the podcast last week, I said, look, Will Brooks has got to be a guy you look at as a favorite, but he had a tough contest in Rashid Magomedov, and one of those fights that went to the tiebreaker, which I was talking to a couple of people
in the MMA industry last week about that, and they were basically they were all in agreement with us that the PFL tie-breaking system needs to be changed.
Yeah, it sucks. I mean, that fight was close, and you know, Rashid Magomedov went on to advance to the finals with the win over Tavares, who didn't even win his quarterfinal against Islam Mamedov. So it was a bit of a cluster there, and it was really, you know, when you have tournaments, I mean, the whole deal with tournaments is conclusion. You know, without a doubt, this is the best guy in the field, and we did not get that with the lightweights. Those two rounds were so close between Magomedov and Will Brooks, and it's a shame because of how talented Will Brooks is. And, you know, my general thought process is the next time PFL runs this back, I think you do the quarterfinals on one day and the semis on another. I just think it's fair to the competitors when you have $1 million on the line. That, to me, is the solution, and you can run more events. And when you run so many tournaments, you can stack the cards. So I think moving forward, Jason, you know, we had a few draws on these quarterfinals. I think we had like three. I think absolutely we need to have quarterfinals on some nights and semifinals on others, just to not even have the draw issue anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it's something they definitely have to look at. But when you look at the light heavyweight bracket, I think it's probably, if you would have, you know, asked PFL officials before this event, you got to think that their ideal final would have been Vinny Magalhaes versus Sean O'Connell. Vinny Magalhaes with those submission wins, both beautiful submission wins that he got there on this fight card. And then, you know, you look at the lightweight field, we talk about Will Brooks getting upset. You know, in the first round, you know, when you look at this lightweight, you know, final, I don't know how many people would have picked this one heading into the season.
Yeah, I don't know. Nathan Schultz has really had a hell of a tournament. He really has, and he looked great against Chris Wade. And he wasn't the guy I pinpointed as the favorite for the lightweights, and here he is. And I think he's going to beat Rashid Magomedov. But you know, Rashid is a guy who we have seen have success. That's not the biggest shock, I think. But Nathan Schultz, Magomedov, not super marketable, but it's a fight I'm down for. Again, I really enjoyed this card. I really did, especially the last few fights. I mean, the last five or so fights from the first Vinny Magalhaes quarterfinal on were just great. So, yeah, that's a surprise. Magalhaes in the finals isn't. I mean, he just looks so talented, and he's a guy I actually want to see back in the UFC. It really seems like he's figured things out, and he's just going in there with these guys and laying waste to them. Sean O'Connell is just enjoyable to watch, man. That Sean O'Connell-Smilino Rama fight was just a crazy 1 minute, 45-second fight. And I think, look, Sean O'Connell's got his work cut out for him. He's going to be a pretty big underdog against Vinny Magalhaes. But I will say that I really enjoyed PFL 9 way more than PFL 8. I just thought the last few fights, and the main card is a long watch if you're watching it live. But I did really think that Vinny Magalhaes is just a super talent that PFL has, and I think he's likely going to get a $1 million payday.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Of course, PFL 10 coming up on Saturday. We've got the welterweights and middleweights. The middleweight bracket went through a change as Eddie Gordon steps in due to injury. He's going to take on John Howard. The bottom of the bracket is all American, so we're going to have an American versus an international fighter in the final. You know, as I look at this middleweight bracket, man, at the bottom, I would probably favor Lewis Taylor. At the top part of it, you know, I can see all four of them.
Yeah, I could. I think Magomedov was my pick. But it's tough, man. I'm way more interested in the welterweight side of things just because I really want to see Ray Cooper or Jake Shields again because I'm a sick bastard.
Oh man, if that's like the first fight, please help. So, you know, I mean, oof.
Rick Shields wins, dude. That would be the craziest story. I mean, Ray Cooper looks like a hell of a find by PFL, but I'm rooting for Jake Shields because he got destroyed in that first fight.
But you got to be thinking, if you're running the PFL, the ideal semifinal matchup at the top of that bracket's got to be Jake Shields versus Rick Story.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, I think
just
so.
Just because of the name value.
You're right, because of the name value. But I will say, if you're PFL, I mean, you got to love what you've seen out of Ray Cooper. Like, he could be a star fighter. I mean, he's looked great in his two fights.
Then you look at the bottom half of this bracket. You know, it is an all-European bracket. You got two Russians, Ukrainian, and a Serbian down here. Of course, Joel Zeferino was supposed to be the number two seed. However, he's out. Nurmagomedov, as the alternate, steps in. You know, Nurmagomedov has got to be a guy that I would probably favor. I mean, yes, he did, you know, was unsuccessful one of his fights in the regular season, but he would be a guy that I would probably point to as a guy I kind of like coming out of the bottom part of that bracket.
And an interesting point that, you know, his fight won't be on the main card. I just feel like the Nurmagomedov name is really strong. I know the way it's situated is due to seeding, but I mean, I would have guaranteed him on the main card, and he's got a tough fight against the Serbian Bojan Vlahovic. But it'll be fun to see Khabib there, you know, chilling in the background.
And of course, that all goes down on Saturday night. You can watch that on NBCSN. Of course, no UFC, no Bellator this week. So PFL, that, you know, I'm definitely getting interested more in PFL. And definitely interested in that New Year's Eve card. I can't guarantee I'll watch that live, but definitely will be on the DVR. Now, there's things in this sport, Daniel, that just make you go WTF. Had one of those moments in the past couple of days. Has Ronda Rousey suffered some memory loss?
What did she say?
How the UFC should not give special star treatment to the bigger name fighters. Like, does she forget kind of how she got to do what she wanted, and particularly when she lost to Amanda Nunes, how she didn't have to do any media for that fight?
Yeah, it's like, you know, she has a good point, but she's speaking from experience. You know, it's definitely hypocritical, the statements, which are true statements, but it's not something you want to hear from Ronda, because, like, she benefited from the different treatment. Yeah, and so, again, you look at the media commitments that she didn't do, and it's just, yeah.
Do you think Vince, Triple H, Stephanie, just kind of keep that video in the back of their mind at some point where maybe she tries to get some star treatment out of them?
I don't know. I mean, Vince doesn't watch anything that's not WWE, but yeah, I mean, that's something they can play. Again, it's just, you know, Ronda's got them. You know, Ronda's got them at the balls. You know, like, they are, you know, acquiesce. And Ronda's the type of celebrity that you just do whatever to make her happy.
It's just like, it's like when I saw those comments, I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. She really just did not say that.
Yeah, it's just ironic and hypocritical. It's just like she constantly says stuff like that. And it's like, you know, she's right, but it just you can't take it seriously when she says it, given that she literally was one of the primary benefactors of being treated like a star.
Well, I mean, let's be honest, you know, she was a big star in the UFC, but she Conor is a different type of star in terms of, yes, Ronda brought a lot of different eyeballs to the UFC product, but Conor brings, Conor's, you look at, you know, every one of his pay-per-view fights are over a million, and, you know, now over 2 million with the fight. So he's at a different star level than she was.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's at a different star level than anyone else, given that he's a part of the biggest buy rate in UFC history.
By the way, speaking of Khabib, are you over this whole Khabib Mayweather thing?
Yeah, that has zero chance of happening. I'm so done with that.
I saw that. I guess there's already betting odds on a boxing fight between Floyd and Khabib. Floyd, a 20-1 favorite.
He should be a higher favorite. I mean, come on. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I think this is my thing about Khabib. And Is Khabib truly a pay-per-view draw? You know, the one thing that did anyone talk about how many Russian fans were in Vegas for 229?
No.
Because it seemed like all you heard was about the Irish fans that were there. That's just something I'd be kind of interested about. Can Khabib be a draw? Even though I saw the whole McGregor stuff on Sunday from Cowboy Stadium,
And I'm just sitting there going, are we going to start the conversation of Cowboy Stadium in the UFC again? And then I started to kind of think about it. Because one of the podcasts I listen to that's not a part of the Radio Influence network is the Pat McAfee podcast. And they were talking about on their show earlier this week of kind of what could the UFC put together to sell 100,000 tickets. And obviously I was thinking Conor versus Nate as a trilogy matchup, or maybe Conor versus Aldo. I just don't think you can rush into this rematch with Khabib. I think that's kind of a tough sell, but like, would have to be like a Jones Brock type fight as the, like the co-main event. And then like, you still have like a Woodley fight as a third title fighter on the card.
Man, I think you only need one fight. I really do. I think people are going to buy a ticket based on one fight, and it's got to be the super duper fight. I mean, if they do 100,000 seat venue or a 90,000 seat venue or an 80,000 seat venue, you're going to stack the card. But the guy or the female bringing all the people, that's going to be it. You know, it would be Connor. I think Connor Khabib 2's next, because it comes down to what Connor wants. And I think he wants Khabib. I really do. I mean, I think this is a guy who still cares so much. I mean, John Kavanaugh was on the Joe Rogan podcast, and he talked about in a perfect world for Connor, he would live in Las Vegas and fight every Saturday. And I think he's a guy who just wants to get back in the cage and beat Nurmagomedov. So I think Khabib Connor 2 is the next fight. I think the biggest fight the UFC can ever do is Connor GSP. That's just my personal opinion. But Jones-Lesnar is probably right there. But it probably isn't, to be honest, because I think Connor's the straw that stirs the drink. So I'm looking at the biggest possible fight the UFC can do. I still will say I think it's GSP-Connor. Going back to the fact that back in the day, the biggest fight they could do is GSP-Silva. And I just think this merging of one of the biggest stars of the previous generation against the biggest star of our generation would be the super-duper fight to do.
And something to note on the whole Khabib Connor thing, next Wednesday, both of them will be on the agenda for the Nevada Athletic Commission. It'll be for the temporary suspension. And then you're probably looking at least another month or so before they actually have their disciplinary complaint. So something to pay attention to. I'm also interested to see if Cody McKenzie is on that agenda, which he most likely will be as well. But let's get into our buy sell segment. Up first, it's going to be about John Jones, Alexander Gustafsson 2, which of course will be the main event of the end of the year card. Buy or sell, Jones Gustafsson 2 is the best fight booked for the rest of 2018 in MMA.
I'm going to sell it. This is a ginormous fight. But from my personal point of view, I think the biggest fight is Ortega Holloway. I mean, look, Jones Gustafsson's going to do the most business, and I guess that's the question. So I guess I'm buying it. But for me, what I think is the biggest fight is Holloway Ortega, and followed by Gustafsson Jones, and number three is Cyborg Nunez.
I tell you, I mean, I like what you're saying there with Ortega and Holloway, but I mean, I guess part of that question is, does a fight truly take place? We've seen kind of the issues that Max Holloway has had throughout 2018, and but I'm gonna buy that Jones Gustafsson is.
Let me throw something at you real quick. What do you think would do a better buy rate? Cormier versus Derek Lewis, or Cyborg versus Nunez?
I would say Cormier Lewis, just because timing of Derek Lewis and kind of how everyone has really got to know who he is.
Yeah, it's a close call. I think a lot of momentum there, and Cormier just being a part of that John Jones Lesnar discussion has elevated him, in addition to, you know, being heavyweight champion. That's up there. I would actually say Cyborg Nunez, but I think it's a close one.
Yeah, no, definitely a close one. By the way, speaking of Jones Gustafsson, we got this question from Scott. He said, Gus versus Jones 2,
does this happen or does someone get hurt between now and then? Well, hopefully it happens. I mean, obviously, you know, they've put another light heavyweight fight on that card. Of course, remember, this is going to be for the light heavyweight title. Once the punch is thrown, it's officially for the title here. So I hope it happens. But if someone does get hurt, I think Aleir Latifi is going to be the guy that steps up. As long as it's not against Gustafsson because they're not going to fight each other.
Yeah, it might be him or it might be the winner of Anthony Smith, Volkan Ozdemir. They might be waiting the wings, but again, that's a major drop off in Byron inches. Who knows, man? Maybe it'll be Daniel Cormier who steps up and fights John Jones. You know, that's my pick.
Yeah, it's like you said last week on the podcast. What happens if Derek Lewis doesn't make November 3rd? Are we going to get Cormier Jones?
I think so. I think if we did a buy or sell segment of does Cormier Jones happen in the next 4 months, I would buy it. I would buy it. Just because I feel like things like that happen in MMA.
I think that fight happens July of next year.
Oh, yeah. If it's premeditated, that's when it happens. But
I if you're really going to, you know, kind of build up to that, and I mean, that would be a great end for Cormier. If he can, you know, get Derek Lewis, then get Brock, and then a fight against Jones, man, that would be big business for him. Our other buy-sell segment is related to Josh Thompson. And this comes from – Josh Thompson was on MMA Junkie Radio, and he was basically asked about, you know, kind of is he calling a career, whatnot, and he's definitely not calling a career. And this was his quote. There are a couple fights I would really like to get. And let's not beat around the bush. There is a small chance that Gil Melendez may be free in 1 year, so you never know. But Gil and I feel like it would be great to do it in Bellator. Who knows? There's so much that could happen between now and then. But I've got the utmost respect for Gil. So buy or sell, we see Thompson Melendez 4 in the next 2 years.
I'm going to buy it, man. It just seems destined. I think Gilbert test free agency. I think he's going to leave. I think he's just going to take a payday, and I think the payday will be there. And, yeah, man, Thompson's hinting at it. I'm going to buy it, man. Those are some of my favorite fights in Strikeforce history, and I would love to see a fourth one.
Yeah, I got to buy this one, too. I think that if Gil wants to continue fighting after his time in the UFC's done, to me, that's a fight in San Jose written all over it, and probably a fight that you would see on DAZN. By the way, speaking of streaming services, we got this question from Chuck. He says, what should we expect from ESPN in terms of coverage come the new year? Crawford fight did great numbers and got a ton of press. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you saw this. The Crawford fight from Saturday night was the most watched combat sports event of all year. Did tremendous numbers on ESPN. I mean, I think you're already kind of seeing ESPN's the amount of covers they're doing on the UFC. I mean, obviously bringing Ariel in and the show he's doing with Shel Son, I think you're going to see a big amount of coverage. You know, is it going to equal, you know, more television viewers? I think because of the ESPN brand, it will, but let's hope that it helped grow as a sport, because I do kind of feel like we've kind of hit a certain point in the sport, and also I truly do believe that a reason MMA television ratings are what they are is based on the flow of these broadcasts. I mean, it is tough to get through a cable television MMA show.
Yep, it's just not how our brains are wired to consume media. That's as simple as that. I think ESPN is going to do great for the UFC. I think the coverage is going to be there. It's going to be streamlined. You're going to see MMA coverage on SportsCenter, on Pardon the Interruption, on their Snapchats. And I just think the deal with the UFC is ESPN is going to be big for the UFC. But again, the tide for the UFC is always connected to their big stars and how often they fight. And that, to me, is the indicator on how successful the business here will be in a given year for the UFC, is how big those massive buy rates are.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be interesting to kind of see. Also, what are the type of shows that we see on regular ESPN and also ESPN Plus? I think I mean, let's remember, the first Fox show was a heavyweight title fight, and the deal is ending with Kevin Lee versus Ally Quinta.
Which is a great fight, but... definitely not the promise of the heavyweight title fight.
Yeah, I mean, we quickly saw that, you know, I mean, and look, you knew you weren't going to get high profile fights, and Lee Iaquinta is a nice fight. It's actually a nice card they're building there, for Milwaukee. So Edson Barboza, Dan Hooker's on that fight card. I love that fight. That's a great fight.
Absolutely, would watch. I mean, I love that one, man. There are so many bangers on the lineup there.
We'll kind of end this week's podcast by talking about some news and notes. Dustin Poirier announced that I believe I'm 99% sure he said hip injury, which kind of it's because of the change in the UFC USADA program. Like, I almost feel like fighters are going to have to come out and say their injuries now.
Yeah, I do too. Because the you know, it transparency is clear, and we need the communication there to be sure.
By the way, another WTF moment happened earlier this week. So Bradley Scott received a suspension by USADA for 2 years for testing positive for a metabolite of cocaine. We're seriously suspending guys 2 years for recreational drug use?
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. You shouldn't be doing coke. But 2 years for coke is effing stupid. It is like, what the hell? It should be a performance-enhancing deal.
If you want to lay the hammer to him, give him a year. But 2 years? I mean, he's getting the same amount of time that someone's, you know, using a steroid for.
It's stupid, man. It really is. I mean, because it's stupid because, like, this guy is not financially, like, a top 5% MMA fighter. He needs to fight. Taking him away for 2 years for cocaine is just absurd, man.
I mean, look, part of this is you know, and I'm not, look, I am not familiar with cocaine at all, but I was texting some people about this, and I was like, haven't I read before that cocaine leaves your system very quickly? And kind of the response I got was, yeah. So you kind of look at that and say, okay, well, you know, how are you feeling in competition, you know, test for this? Because remember, cocaine it's not banned out of competition. But when I saw, I was like, 2 years for a recreational drug? Like, man, it made me think, like, if you are already in the UFC, your contract comes up, do you look at this USADA testing program and start saying, you know what, maybe I don't want to be a part of this anymore?
Yeah, I mean, that's a major negative. It really is. And it's absurd, again, that he's getting suspended for 2 years. Because it's almost like a smart business move to stay away from the USADA pool, because from a business standpoint, Brad Scott's not going to be able to make money for 2 years in the cage.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you look at that, I mean, and, you know, I mean, to me, 6 months, 12 months seems like a way more appropriate suspension for that than 2 years.
Yeah, and I honestly would say there should not be a suspension.
Well, I mean, the other thing is, like, I'm sure, and I tweeted about it and didn't get a ton of response, but I'm sure if this was marijuana 2 year suspension, people would have been losing their goddamn minds.
As they should have. Again, it's like, you know, people should be able to smoke weed or whatever. You know, again, coke's a hard drug and it's very, very, very illegal, but it's not, to me, in USADA's parameters to have this type of punishment for cocaine.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's just weird. Of course, we mentioned Primus Chandler 2 sec. Oh, yeah, Fight for a Troop show. Very cool event that Bellator is going to be doing. Scott Coker mentioned that along with fights, or sounds like Viacom's going to bring in some musical acts there. Of course, you know, this will be, you know, that'll be a Friday night show on Paramount. And then the Saturday night show, you know, will be on DAZN. I'm kind of surprised that they didn't put Chandler Primus on the DAZN event.
Yeah, I think I am too. And I guess it's just like they look like they needed a main event, and that's why they did it.
But a cool event they're doing. I mean, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to both cards, man. I'm looking forward to the general atmosphere of being at Hawaii just in the first place. But when I watch the UFC troop shows, I always love that atmosphere as well. So I think we're going to have back-to-back shows with just phenomenal atmospheres, both in Hawaii, and I'm looking forward to it, man. And I think those guys are really going to get a kick out of performing in front of the troops.
Yeah, yeah, it should be. Of course, that's still another month and a half or away. So really want to appreciate everyone taking time out to listen to the MMA Report podcast. Of course, Podcasts always available, RadioInfluence.com, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Of course, we'll be back next week. We'll get you discussing everything that's going on in MMA. We've got the UFC card in Canada. The Volkan-Anthony Smith fight is coming up, so we'll have a UFC show to talk about and everything else going on in the world of MMA. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
It's called Making Coco, the Grant Fear Story, and joining us right now is Shane Fennessy, the co-producer. Shane, thanks for joining us today.
No one had a style like Grant. You ask anyone who watched him play back in the day, and there's countless goalies who say, I modeled my style after Grant, and it was, you know, pure athleticism that that enabled him to do it. I mean, you wouldn't be a fan of hearing this, which I'm sure you know already, but, you know, Grant wasn't the biggest advocate of going to the gym or eating a healthy diet. So it was just this amazing innate talent that enabled him to play like he did, and his drive and his competitiveness. And, you know, as far as kind of forging ahead as the first black superstar in hockey, I mean, yeah, the first black guy in the Hall of Fame, and now Willie O'Ree is in as a builder, which is fantastic. But you talk to the list of guys that said they were inspired by Grant to play, like Jerome McGinley, a guy from St. Albert, was a bat boy for Grant's summer baseball teams and was just idolized this guy. And Grant, Jerome was always a good hockey player, and he would tell people, I want to be a pro hockey player. And they would say, yeah, Jerome, you know, that's great, you're good, but there's no black superstars in the NHL. And he would say, like, are you kidding me? Like, look at Grant Fuhr. How can you not see him right there? And I think because Grant had a mask on, that a lot of people didn't quite realize that he was a black player, but the guys who were paying attention really were inspired, and it drove them to to big heights.
Crush Performance with Jeff Crushell can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.